Welcome to the Business Growth Podcast with me, Kevin Miller. On this podcast, you're going to hear some awesome interviews from business leaders, experts, and entrepreneurs as they share their story, their journey, and some expert tips and insight of the things they've learned along the way. So sit back, enjoy, learn, and grow. And thanks for joining me. I've got a great show today. I've got Dale Alcock with me in the studio. Dale's here. He's going to let us know a bit about his story and basically how he's become such a WA institution and such a success in our state. So it'll be great to hear from Dale. What we want to do is we really just want to learn a bit about Dale's story. He's a WA success story. He went from working on the tools as an apprentice bricklayer through to really having one of the state's most reputable and recognised building companies and one of the most successful. And he's been very grateful to come in today and share a little bit of his story. So good morning, Dale.
Good morning, Kevin. Great to be with you and great to be with your listeners.
Yeah, thanks very much, mate. As I say, we were probably chatting a bit too much behind the scenes there. we're trying to keep some good content for the listeners. So look, just what I'd love to know about Dale really is the early stages. To get to the point that you're at now, very successful individual with a successful business, started off as an apprentice bricklayer. And I think that's the type of thing that a lot of our listeners would really resonate with as far as the guys that are on the tools. They might be listening now, might be a plumber, might be a brickie, might be a roof carpenter. They have their own small business, but it's how they get from that point through to somebody, at your level now. What's the sort of things, and tell us a bit about your story.
Yeah, look, I guess I was very fortunate to have grown up in a family that was all about building. We were in a small country town, Kellerberrin, 200 kilometres east of Perth, and my father was a bricklayer, and his father was a carpenter and emigrated from the UK after the Second World War, and there was family already living up around Kellerberrin, and he established a small family business there. And growing up in that, I went to year 10 at Kellerberrin, went to year 11 and 12 at Northam High School, just down the road by 60 miles, and boarded there at the local hostel. Did really well at school and graduated to be able to study architecture at UWA and was accepted. But I actually convinced my parents that I wanted to do a bricklaying apprenticeship and said, that's what I'd like to do. And they said, well, your grades are pretty good at school. Why don't you keep going? And it was funny, the career guidance officer at Northam High School at the time said to me, well, you've got to have rocks in your head if you can go and study architecture. Why would you do that? And why do you want to become a bricklayer? I'd probably love to go and have a beer with him now and sort of say to him, I didn't take your advice and look where it got me. So I convinced my mum and dad, and so I took on an apprenticeship within the family business. And our little building company, F.W. Alcock & Son in Kellerberrin, we did everything because there weren't subbies there.
Yep.
Dad employed labour, employed apprentices. So if we were doing an addition or a new home, we had to set it out, dig the footings, lay the footings, the concrete, do the brickwork. So it was an apprenticeship in all trades to some degree because we had carpenters, we had bricklayers working with us on the tools. And so it was an apprenticeship in building more than an apprenticeship in just bricklaying.
So you got to understand all the different sort of trades and all the process.
All the different facets and how things kind of mesh together. And Dad was absolutely fastidious. He wasn't so concerned about how quick you did what you did, but you had to do it right. And if you didn't do it right, you had to do it again. And the first brick I laid was a face brick. He said, well, you can always lay guts bricks later on when you pick up speed, but I want you to lay a really good face brick. And that was kind of the start of it. And I did my apprenticeship, worked on the tools during the day, and then I did my builder's registration by correspondence at night.
Ah, okay.
So ran the two things in parallel. Did that, graduated to become a builder. But I'd met a young lady in Perth, my now wife Jan. She's a South Perth girl, and I was spending a lot of weekends in Perth. And I couldn't get all of the subjects complete by correspondence for my builder's registration. So I said, well, look, I'm going to move down to Perth, get a job in a building company, and finish these units with my builder's registration, and then I'll be a builder. And kind of the rest is history. I looked in the situations vacant in the Saturday Morning West Australian, and there was a job for a company called Webb & Brown Neves as a two-way operator. And back then, the two-way operator was coordinating all the materials to go to site. And I applied for that and was successful in getting it. I was there for about 18 months and then left. And as we were chatting before we came on air, Jan and I went off to England and we rode push bikes around England and Ireland for about 18 months and, 6 months, I should say, covered about 3,500 miles, came back, went back up to the family business. And then about 18 months after I left Webb & Brown Neves, I got an invitation to go into business with John Webb and Gary Brown Neves of Webb & Brown Neves. So that was where Dale Alcock Homes started in 1987. And I was 25. Jan and I were 25, and we moved back to Perth and started in business.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to hear about even the going overseas, Dale. That's because I guess when I listen to that, you learnt your trade, obviously, or you learnt a broad skill set of actually hands on and how that works. I guess how the trade based businesses work, and you've done your qualifications. But at that point, a lot of people would probably say, right now, I'm going to take the next step on that journey as far as professionally or business. But you didn't really. So you sort of got to that point, and then you decided to do the trip overseas.
Yeah, well, it was kind of interesting working for Webb & Brown Neves and my two bosses at the time. And I was there for 18 months, and I was throwing everything into it because I'd come from a family business, and it was like, you know, 7 days a week we were on, and there was a little material supply business with our family business, and it was right next door to where we lived. And so if a farmer came in and wanted, you know, a ton of cement on a Sunday midday, you'd get up from the kitchen table and you'd go and help load it up, and six sheets of mesh, reinforcing mesh, you'd load it up, you'd do the invoice, and, you know, you're 14 or 15. So being around a business was just part of life for me and our family. And in working for Webb & Brown Neves for that 18 months, I worked really hard, 6 days a week, probably 11, 12 hours a day. And then I asked for a pay rise and that wasn't forthcoming. And I wanted to go and supervise houses and that wasn't forthcoming. So I actually then said, look, this has been great, but we're going to leave and go overseas. So I kind of left the business, and maybe that left a bit of a void. And but the interesting thing was 18 months later, obviously at that age I'd left a bit of an impression to those two directors.
Yes, yep.
And when they had this view about starting another business in a sort of first homeowner category, was Webb & Brown Neves was more of a middle market builder.
Yeah.
They said, well, you know, come and join us. And I was a little reluctant at first because, you know, I don't think I'd earn a lot of money. Yeah. I couldn't get a pay rise, and I couldn't really advance my career with them. But then out of the blue, they said, one of the directors, John Webb, rang me in middle of winter and said, look, I guess you're off trying to build something that's going to be wet, cold, and miserable. There's got to be something better. Come down to Perth. We're looking at starting a business and we want you to be part of it. And I said, no. So I kind of rejected it. And then 6 months later, middle of summer, hot, dusty, 40-degree day in the wheat belt, I get a phone call from John Webb at about 5 o'clock in the morning, just as I was sort of getting up, getting into it. And he said, look, I'm not going to go away. We want you to be part of this business. So Jan and I came down to Perth. It was December 86, and in January 87, we started Dale Alcock Homes.
Going back to when you were learning all the skills, the trade skills and things, Dale, I mean, that's something that a lot of business owners in a trade environment find different. They understand how to do the job. They understand how to drill a hole. They understand how to put a roof together. But learning basic business skills is something that a lot of people learn along the way.
Yeah.
And listening to what you have to say, I'm assuming that a lot of the skills you learned were for being around that family business, being around that environment where you had, you know, your dad, as you mentioned, and you'll be sponging off them. You'll be getting some of those skills from awareness and just from being around them. Is that fair to say?
100%. I maintain I'm a student of the University of Life.
Yeah.
You never graduate. You don't get a certificate. But if you're up for learning every day, if you don't close your mind to the fact that, you know, you get to a position where you know it all, well, then that's a fail. But if you're up for it, you take on different challenges and opportunities. There's always an opportunity within those challenges. And I look at it, I think it's about maintaining a really positive attitude throughout. And that's something that I work on, and I've got a really hard resolution around remaining very positive always. I do sort of say to people, you get a crap attitude for free. It doesn't, yeah. you know, just hang around people with bad attitude and you'll get one.
Yeah.
But to get a really positive attitude, you do have to work on it. And so that's part of it. But I think it's part of always being up for that opportunity where the ball drops at your feet. You've got a choice. You can either pick it up and run hard with it, or leave it at your feet.
Yeah.
And I suppose my history is I've tended to seek those opportunities. They're there, and challenge myself to take them on. And you'll always learn something.
And you think that's obviously a personality trait, Dale. That's something that you. It's hard. Do you think that can be nurtured? Do you think that's something that you can nurture in someone?
I think you can. I think it's about for anybody. We all sort of start out with the same thing. So I've not got any, you know, silver spoon in my mouth. I wasn't coming from a really wealthy family. We were a small, struggling business in the country. And the farmers had a bad year, had a drought. We'd have a bad year. So we kind of was that roller coaster. So we got to understand the cycles of business or the influences just from something natural. So I think anyone can challenge themselves. And I think it's actually about taking baby steps and reinforcing, you know, what's working, reviewing what's not working. And, you know, to be successful, you've only got to be right 51% of the time. So it gives you a lot of scope.
Moving forward a little bit. So obviously you start Dale Alcock Homes. How old are you when you start Dale Alcock Homes?
25, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. What's the sort of the structure of the business at that point? Are you on the tools in that capacity?
No, not on the tools. So Jan and I kind of pitched in, and we invested in the business, and our two senior partners, John Webb and Gary Brown Neves, invested. And at that time, I was sort of, Jan and I were 30% of the business, and they were 70% of the business. And basically, it was about structuring the business. We took several people from the Webb and Brown Neves business that were really good people, and we had this nucleus of around 5 to 6 people. And all of those 5 to 6 people that started in the business with us, probably the shortest career was around 15 or 16 years one of them, and one of them is actually back with us today some 30-plus years later. But really good people, and we went on a journey together to learn and discover. And but in the first year, from a standing start, we had 3 display homes, one in Sorrento, one in Leeming, and one out in Morley. And we actually sold 200 homes in our first year from a standing start. And the parent company, Webb & Brown Neves, was doing about 80 homes a year. So we kind of quadrupled.
You smashed it.
The scale of the business. And it was really fun times, exciting times. Again, it was that kind of sink or swim, that challenge that I was taking on something. I'd never run my own business, let alone a business in Perth. I was from the country, so there was this adjustment of living in Perth and taking on a business. Jan was pregnant with our daughter, Sally. She was born March of that first year we operated the business. 6 years later, we had 3 girls. The business from 2 businesses had grown into around 5 or 6 businesses.
Yep.
We were building around 800 to 1,000 homes a year. So there was a lot going on.
And I guess back then the business landscape would be slightly different, as far as there's a lot more opportunity now, I guess, for businesses, or there's different platforms. There's a larger way of getting your message to an audience now. There's more means to do it. And I guess back then, that would be a harder thing to do because you didn't have your social media. The web's a bit more in its infancy at that point. So as a business owner back then, and you're trying to drive the business, and as you say, you've sold 200 homes in your first year, so you've done extremely well. As the owner of the business, what are you thinking about? What sort of methods are you using in those early days?
Yeah, look, there were some interesting ones. We had these kind of bootleg signs that we used to put up, and any spare time that I had, I'd be out there with my car, with core flute plastic signs, with putting up directional signs on. I hope there's no one from Synergy or Western Power listening, but, you know, I'd climb up power poles and nail directional signs to a Dale Alcock display. We only had three that we started with, but what I intended to do was to make our business look much bigger than it was.
Yep.
So signage was a critical one. The few company cars that we had kind of magnetic signs on them. And today you see in Perth, most of the builders will have acrylic signs plastered all over their cars.
Yep.
But we kind of led that. At the time when we entered the industry, none of the builders' cars had any signage whatsoever on them. But, what I'd try and do was just magnify the business in any way we could, you know, putting on shirts with a logo on them, et cetera. You know, those things we take for granted today, but they didn't happen back then. So the signage on the building sites, that was critical. They had to be maintained. If they blew off, we'd have to put another one up there. Make sure that those signs face the traffic. If we were building on a corner, put two signs, one on each street. All of those little things were really critical to making sure that we were bigger than the business actually was.
Yeah, so you were creating sort of an illusion of scale then, I guess. And like they talk about disruptive and being disruptive in an industry, and it sounds like that's something that obviously, you, as you mentioned, nobody else was doing some of these things. So
no, and you know, I think one of the things that growing up in a family in a small country town, what I tried to do was take the values that I knew and the culture that I had from working with a family business in the country into, in a sense, a bigger country town, into the city. That was about looking after our own people, making sure, you know, that I had a good feel for the trades, but also the quality and the outcomes that we needed to deliver for our customers. And then most importantly, making sure that we were delivering for our customers and that there was good connection with our customers, with our people as well. And so, you know, those early days, I was very much dealing directly with our customers. And, you know, it was kind of not a lot of emails and things like that back in those days, but I would be handwriting letters to customers thanking them for
their business,
you know, building with us at the end of the day. And that got, you know, too big. And then I would make sure that I would ring every customer because that made sure that I was being held to account. There was an accountability. And our management and our staff knew that I had direct contact. So that really informed them that there was nowhere for them to hide. So we're all accountable. So a lot of the structure of the businesses today that are in the ABN Group have those principles embedded. Now, I can't talk to every customer today for every company that we're in, and Melbourne as well, but customers can and will get to me if there's a real problem, and that holds our business to account. And I think that's a good thing.
And I think it shows that you care as well, Dale. You know, that's that obviously that's one of the most importance. And I think that listening to you, what resonates with me is more the initial early years with the community and the family business. You know, that's very much the basis, and it creates values, doesn't it? And those values, listening to you, that you've taken those values and scaled those values, and they're simple values, but they're of an utmost importance, regardless of the size of the business.
That they are. And you know, I think they're things that you've got a choice as a person in business. If you really want to develop that business where it succeeds over the longer term, because it's not easy in business, but you might say it's easy to be a kind of instant hit, but to actually be there year in, year out and performing at the highest level, you've got to have those disciplines, those protocols, and the right culture and values within the business. And that way, the people that you bring in, and the most critical thing in a business is bringing in the right people. If you let the wrong people in, then you're going to have the wrong business. And so that's a critical one. And if you get it right, and those values are very strong within your business, to some degree it's self-managing, because the managers know the culture and values of the people they should be employing. And so just don't let a poor person into your business is a good start.
And make sure they're following, like you say, make sure they're following through on your values and what you're about as a person, what your business is about.
Yeah. And one of the things today that I get great joy from is actually when I've got a contact with a customer. We had one the other week, was an outstanding review, and I emailed the customer and said, look, thanks for that. And they were building down in the southwest, and they said, the fellow got back to him and he said, look, no problem. He said, this is the third home we've built with you. We've built two in Perth, one in the southwest, and our daughter's built with your Celebration Homes business. You're most welcome, and all three in our daughter's home have been fantastic. So you go, that's awesome. The other thing I get a great kick out of is we run a very large apprenticeship program. We have 85 apprentices in training today. With the stimulus boost that's around at the moment, we're going to increase that by 20 to 30%. Yeah. Again, opportunities for young West Australians, boys and girls, to enter the housing industry. And we've trained over 1,000 new tradespeople since 2004 through that program. And to see young kids, 17, 18-year-old, they're not even looking their parents in the eye. The best you'll get out of them is a grunt. And then to see them graduate 3 years later, you know, taking the world on and having that opportunity to join our industry and be a part of it. And whatever pathway they take from there, they've got that trade certificate and you can't take it away from them.
And that obviously gives you great enjoyment. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And look, so as you scale the business, and you were talking about, you know, in the early years, it's very much for most business owners, they wear many hats. You know, you're writing the letters to the clients, you're maybe doing the signs on the weekend, there's a lot of things that you're doing yourself, you're hands-on involved in your business. And as the business scales, what's the sort of challenges as far as, you know, how do you decide what you should be doing and what you shouldn't, as far, you know, because delegation and things come in here, but how do you determine where your time is best spent?
I learnt, you know, to delegate very early on, because what I understood was that if I was going to try and do everything, and I can cover a lot of ground in a day, but you still need to sleep and you still need a bit of downtime, but I would have to delegate, because if I didn't delegate, it would limit how many homes a year we could build and complete. And so that was something that I really didn't have a great struggle with, but it related back to the quality of people that you're employing and making sure you're all on the same page and that they would be held to account for that. So the other thing is that I think it was very early on understanding that, coming from a family business where my father was very exacting about what he expected, I had to kind of accept also that other people may not measure to the same level that I could do it myself. So you had to give away a little bit that, look, I would expect it at this level. I don't think they're going to generate necessarily the same energy, enthusiasm, and necessarily that 100% commitment that you as an owner are going to expect. So it's not about near enough is good enough. You still want to be exacting in what you're chasing in terms of that excellence and high quality outcome. But when you delegate, you know that the result isn't going to be the same as if you did it everything yourself. But the trade-off is that it's very limited if you try to do everything yourself.
And I guess it comes down to making sure you've got the right people in place to do those jobs. Like you said earlier, it's just making sure that you have the right people to do those specific tasks and making sure that they're competent in doing it.
And communication. You know, I think a bit of a saying that, you know, you can never be accused of over-communicating. And so making sure that the organisation, it's not about formal meetings, but it's kind of bumping in the passage and, oh, did you follow up on that? What was the outcome with that? So that your people knew, even though you're delegating, you're still very interested in the outcome. And I call it looping out. I would always say to people, you follow that up and get back to me. So it's kind of loop out the issue. And they would know that if it wasn't closed out that way, I would be back hounding them. How did you go with the Joneses? Did that get resolved?
Yes. I mean, when you're so, I guess, passionate about your business and you really care about every facet of it, as far as the quality of work, I guess, in your circumstance and the feedback of the clients, it's because you do think that you're the only one that can set to begin with. You do think that maybe you're the only one that does it that way, you know, or does it well, you know.
And you take it very personally, and that's important as well. But I think an accountability is that you live in the same town.
Yeah.
You know, got three daughters, but as they were growing up, you know, you'd go to restaurants out, you know, my name was on the door, used my face in the advertising. By the way, I didn't get a choice in calling the business Dale Alcock Homes. My senior partners, because they were taking a risk on a 25-year-old, said
don't worry,
you know, don't worry about the name, it'll have your name on it.
Yeah.
And if you fail, it fails, and you'll never get another start in Perth. So there's an accountability in that, but I've been able to then turn that into what we've then marketed. And that accountability is something that you can't just put your name on the sign. You've got to live it and breathe it, because people know where to find you.
Especially in Perth.
Yeah. And so I say to our people, well, I have to be able to walk down the street, engage, without a whole lot of negativity coming back. And so that is the accountability that's there.
I wanted to touch on, you know, more sort of the reputation side of things. Obviously, you know, there's no hiding. You're Dale Alcock, there's no hiding. You know, your name's on the door, as you say. And how you've managed to manage that expectation as your business grows, you know, as you've got more people employed, you've got more jobs, you've got more risks, essentially, you've got more things, more moving parts. So what I'd love to know is how you've managed to maintain that reputation and maintain that accountability so that you can hold your head up high in the local landscape.
Yeah, look, one of the things that we did, and it's probably about 6 or 7 years ago now, and we'd been on this journey of growing from one business to multiple businesses and creating, you know, a large group of businesses. And we actually sat down and worked out what we'd been successful at and what we wanted to condense as our values. What were those values? And we went in search of 5 words that might describe what we're about. We ended up with 6, which wasn't too bad, but it took 3 facilitated sessions. And some of that was understanding the things that were critical to get us to where we are. And then some of those words might be aspirational about how we're going to carry ourselves forward. So by distilling those back into the 6 core values, we can then hire on those core values. We can then bring people on board and onboard our people and talk to those values. We can review our people in accordance with those values. And then sometimes we might have to wave someone goodbye because they're not conforming with those values. So that's kind of something that we've put in as a mechanism to assist us as we've grown, because I think good culture often is about storytelling and ensuring that we're telling the good stories and also the not so good stories where we've messed up, because we don't always get it right. But there's an accountability that goes with that, that when we do make mistakes, we're not perfect. How are we going to approach that? How do we then deliver on the right outcome? Making sure, first of all, that we understand that it is a problem. We're not just going to shrug it off. And how do we deal with that to get the right response for our customers and all of our stakeholders? So I think the arrival at a point where you understand what those core values are.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess there's a lot of smaller business owners that, you know, they might be, I know that a lot of business owners, they might be scared to ask for feedback. They might be scared for clients to actually tell them what they think, or, you know, what if something's wrong, you know, that type of mentality. But that's not the right way to be, is it?
No. Well, I found very early on in the business, when I was very, very hands-on, that I was so personally involved that I would take any kind of negative response and reaction personally, and I'd kind of get straight into defense mode because I knew how hard our small team was working to deliver it. But very quickly, I arrived at a position to go, well, the thing you're going to get out of that's a heart attack. You're not going to actually enjoy what you're doing. You do have to accept that you don't always get it right. And, you know, if you're going to build a large business and a successful business, you have to accept in not getting it right, it's actually really vital as to what you do to then set it right from there. And then that's what you then educate your people on going. And it's a dripping tap. You can't just sort of say, right, we've communicated that out, everyone's on board, now the business will run well. It's never ending. It's kind of a constant treadmill. You've got new people coming in. You've got performance that'll wane. You need to lift it. There's a lot of analogies, let's face it, between elite sport and business, and that, you know, continuing the journey at the highest level and making sure that, you know, your practices are at the highest standard and never being happy that you've got it working the way that it should be. So it's not that I'm, you know, constantly disappointed, but you can't sit back and go, we've arrived at a position where this is just the best that it's going to be.
Yeah, so like people say rest on your laurels, isn't it? It's just not resting on your laurels then.
Well, one of our core values is relentless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so another is authentic or genuine. Yeah. So you start to and excellence is another, and leadership is another. Fun and passion are in there.
I guess, touching on the feedback with clients and things as well, I guess that gives you great satisfaction when you overcome a negative. When you overcome a negative, an initial negative outcome or client feedback, it must give you great satisfaction still to this day to overcome those and to put them right.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think that we are producing a handmade product and it's got handmade products within that handmade product.
Yeah.
And so it's not always going to be, you know, like a car coming off a production line. When you're building a home, you've got that kind of climatic influence, you've got locational influence, you've got a lot of influences going on there, and there's people that are putting it together. And so there will be issues that go wrong. Really, if we said to a customer, nothing will go wrong with your build, well, we're kidding ourselves and the customer.
Yeah.
It's actually what's our approach to working with you and working with the stakeholders to get the best outcome that we can, mindful that there will be things that occur that we need to rectify, correct, to get that outcome right.
And I guess it goes back to what you said about making sure that when it does come to those points, having the people in place that have those values at their core to enable them to want to take care of those things as well.
Spot on. But I would be, you know, be wrong of me to sit here and say that we always get that perfectly right and we're 100%. We're not. But we know what right looks like, and we know that that's aspirationally where we need to land more often than not.
So look, you've been extremely successful in business and with, you know, some fantastic lessons just talking to you. It's been absolutely fantastic, really. But what I'd love to know is, after having all the success that you've had and overcoming, I guess, a lot of challenges and going on this journey, at this point in time now, what gives you the greatest satisfaction? What makes you tick? What do you enjoy?
Yeah, look, in growing a group of successful businesses, and we're in Perth and we're also in Melbourne, half our business these days is in Melbourne, and that's been challenging with COVID and the total lockdown that Melbourne's had. I really get the opportunity now to get involved in the parts of the businesses that I can add value to and that I enjoy. And I really love working with our people, and I think that I'm kind of quite creative, and I can bring ideas and concepts and thoughts into the various businesses and parts of the businesses, and then allow our people to take those ideas on board and own them themselves and bring those things to life. So I really love building design. So I get involved with the new designs in all of our businesses, all of our display homes for the different companies in the group. So I love that. I love the marketing and sales process. And I've mentioned it before, our apprenticeship program, to see young boys and girls coming in and they're the next generation of builders, and we're kind of training them, and that's pretty cool. So, and then outside of work, president of Fremantle Dockers, that's fantastic. As I mentioned before, there's a lot of parallels between elite sport and business. And then I have a little pet project as well. There's a young boy from Edgewater, Callum Williams, who's 19. And he's got an aspiration to be a Formula One driver. He's currently in Europe and has just had a really great season in F3. Hopefully another season in F3 up to F2. And then if we can get him to F1, that'd be remarkable. It'd be great if we could have two West Australians on the grid in an F1 with Dan Ricciardo and Callan Williams. And Perth's such a small place. Dan Ricciardo, his dad, Joe, has done our earthworks forever in our business. So there's really close connection. And Michelle,
is he super quick? Would it be in the F1?
Very quick around the sites. And Joe's daughter, Michelle, worked with us for about 10 years as well. So just shows how such a tight community it is in Perth.
Look, Dale, I'm very grateful for your time. And obviously we're running out of time, but I've enjoyed it myself. I've enjoyed having a chat with you on air and off air. It's been great just to hear someone that's still so passionate about their business, someone that actually cares about what the end result, someone that actually, regardless of the size of the business, still cares about getting an end product to their customer that they deserve, and a product that they want, and it's of value to them. So it's been great just to listen to you, and I'm extremely grateful for your time. Just a quick one as well. If you wanted to catch up with Dale again, he is actually going to be part of our station sponsor, the Wanneroo Business Association. Dale's doing a breakfast with them on Friday the 13th of November. That's from 7 a.m. till 9 at the Mindari Marina. So if you've enjoyed this conversation, you can steal a bit more of Dale's time for 2 hours. And as I say, that's in Mindari. And if you want to get any tickets for that, you jump online. It's the wba.asn.au/events. That's wba.asn.au/events. And that's Friday the 13th of November with the Wanneroo Business Association. Dale, look, thanks so much for your time. It's been really insightful, and you've been, you know, fantastic. So thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
No, thanks very much, Kevin, and really appreciate being invited, and all the best to your listeners, and have a great day.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Business Growth Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to come back for more, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can catch up with me on social media on Facebook at Make My Business Better, Instagram at Business Growth AU, or you can jump on our website, www.businessgrowthperth.com.au. See you next time.